Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
So the HomePod got delayed.
I was going to say, I was thinking we'd have a nice relaxed show today. Maybe we talk about some tea. Maybe we talk about some books. No, nope. There's Apple news.
I got some tea right here.
I got some tea right here, too.
Monk's
tea. Blend is what I'm drinking from our friends at the New Mexico Tea Company.
Yeah, I just got the Irish breakfast from New Mexico Tea Company. Not a sponsor anymore. Once was a sponsor, now just a provider of tea, official provider of tea.
They, I also ordered from some other place because I found a couple blends that the place I had been ordering from, ESP Emporium, went basically out of business. But I managed to dig up a place in Ann Arbor called Tea House that sold two of the blends I really liked from the previous place. So I ordered those, and they threw in some samples of a couple things. Pretty good-sized samples, too. I was impressed, I may order from them again in the future.
When you said Tea House, I imagine it's H-A-U-S.
It is in fact H-A-U-S.
Yeah, that's how
that's the correct way to pronounce it, correct? Right?
Yeah, you're German.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Tea House.
Tea House.
The HomePod. I got a funny tweet like a minute ago from somebody who said, trouble in paradise, ? Apple announcing the HomePod so long before the actual launch and then delaying it is crazy. To which I replied basically, no. When you announce a product and say it'll ship by the end of the year and that's 6 months away, there's a lot of time for something to go wrong. Like, I would be more surprised if Apple said this product will ship in a week or two and then it got delayed, right? But 6 months, and every time, anybody who's watched Apple will tell you, anytime they say it'll ship in December, it'll ship at the end of the year.
The end.
Yeah. Like the iMac Pro is the same way, where it's like, is it really going to ship? And that was the Mac Pro, I think, that shipped end of the year, and it was like they shipped 100 of them in the last week of December or something to say they could ship it, right? Like they're really hedging when they do that because they don't really know. And so, yes, I think in hindsight, maybe they should not have announced that product when they did, although maybe they had some competitive reasons to do so. But it was clearly like a way off product that was not done. And it's clearly not going to make that deadline, and Apple's not going to wait. You know, they're not going to ship it when it's not ready. They're going to ship it when it's ready. And so I think they're probably really sad that they're going to miss the holidays, because that would have probably would have sold a lot of them. But
I think they were unlikely to make those in the first place, because when you say something shipping in December, that's pretty late.
That's too late
for most people.
No, now is it, right?
Right.
If you're
Which
not shipping
now,
now, it's not a holiday product. Yeah.
I assume that's why they delayed it now, just to say, like, all right, don't hold off.
Don't
buy your Echo.
Don't save $500 in your Black Friday budget for the HomePod, because it ain't happening.
Yeah, so yeah. I agree. I mean, from all the indications, and of course, you saw it in June in person, but from everybody I talked to... That's the thing. It's like, from everybody I talked to who was actually in the room with one, it was not even remotely a finished product at that point, right? It's like a hollow shell with a speaker in it.
Yeah, they had the exterior, and they had what they were claiming was what it would sound like. But it was very much like a... Nigel in This Is Spinal Tap. It's like, don't even look at it. It was kind of that level of it. Like, describe how it sounds, but otherwise, like, there were no interactions permitted with it. Don't touch it. Don't talk to it. Just listen to this audio. So it was basically an audio demo. And that suggested that product was not ready, which, of course, you know, saying it shipped 6 months later also suggested it wasn't ready. So, of course, it's not ready.
I saw snarky comments from some people saying, like, oh, you know, they need more time because competitors have come out with cheaper, better products. And it's like, they can't fix that in 2 months. This product has already been decided. It's already been designed.
And anybody who's creating a product for the end of the year, they know their competitors are going to come out with new products. That's part of the equation, and Apple doesn't care. This is going to be their shot at it, first shot at it, and it's going to be this, you know, expensive thingy.
Yeah, they don't respond to other companies necessarily, right? Like, at least not in that way of like, oh, we're going to go back to the drawing board and add more features to make it more competitive. No, they don't do that.
Here's
That's
the thing,
not
Apple,
their MO.
Here's the thing Apple never does, is say, oh, no, we are one of the most expensive products in the market. you know, that no, yeah. they don't do that. They go, well, we are going to provide a premium listening experience with ties into our services that nobody else can offer, which is why it will be worth spending right. what it's spending for it. And you know, that's a way to go. Although we would point out, I think you and I both, that they're missing portions of the market that are yes. going to be served by a $99 thingy that they yeah. don't have because they only have a $450 thingy.
But they don't care about those portions
no,
of the market. And
not now.
I mean, they're not even the most
that's
expensive smart speaker anymore, right? Because like Google's putting out their like hefty Google Home Max or whatever, which is like $400. So they're, you know, other people are in that high-end market. Sonos integrating
sure.
voice control, probably eventually on some of its more expensive speakers as well. They're going to be in that end of the market too, right? Like it's competitive at least for a device with multi-room really good audio. So even if they are on the expensive side and they're missing out on that lower end of the market, they've never cared about the lower end of the market. Like they don't care about the $99. This is a company that sells a set-top box for like $180. They don't care. If you want to go buy a $50 set-top box or a $99, you know, Google Home or whatever, they don't care. Go do it. Enjoy it.
But they are, you know, I'm sure the thought was that they would sell a bunch of these for the holidays, and they're not going to sell it.
I was in my budget.
I also wonder, honestly, this just occurred to me, but even if it is ready-ish and they're ramping up production, it's also possible, like, if they have production issues
yeah.
and they get to the point where they know they cannot make anything close to what demand will be, and this is rolling out in multiple countries, right?
Yep.
Even if they have it done and they're having some trouble manufacturing it at its scale, you could argue that they can't launch it, right?
Sure.
Because the last thing you could do is do a product launch and then you can't fulfill at all. Like,
right.
not just like lines where you have to be lucky, but like literally you can't fulfill because you can only have a few thousand of them. If it even has gotten to that point, it would still not be something that they could actually bring out for the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of talk before the iPhone X came out about how short the quantities would be there. And frankly, I've been impressed at how good they seem to be managing
yeah.
that. Because there are delays, but they seem
you
to be coming down.
You can
yeah,
get
you
one.
You can get an iPhone X. And, mm-hmm. and that was not what people were thinking. This would be an incredibly short supply. But
yeah.
Apple, this is what they do. They manufacture at scale. Like, they are very good at that operational end of it and all the logistics. Because they have had a lot of time to practice and a lot of volume on which to practice. So I have no trouble. I mean, I had budgeted some money for the HomePod more as a, you know, I have a bunch of voice assistants. I was curious to see how it stacked up. But I'm also not at all shocked that they decided to push it back. Because like you said, 6 months out, there's a lot of wiggle room, especially when they're not giving like super firm ship dates. So personally, I want to know if the Amazon video app is still coming to the Apple TV
yeah.
by the end of the year. Because there was a moment where that seemed like that might happen. And that moment has passed us by, and
it's
now
still,
there's only 6 weeks left in the year. And
yeah, the Apple TV 4K shipped, and I thought that they would be there, and there's nothing.
And then there was a time where like the Apple TV 4K showed up on Amazon really briefly for like 2 days, and then went away again. And then there was that weird post on Reddit by a supposed Amazon engineer saying, oh, it's done. They're just holding it. It's probably going to come out at the end of October. That didn't happen. I mean, but nobody believes this is an engineering problem.
No.
It's entirely political. And whatever weird deal Amazon and Apple are trying to strike in order to, you know, be friends again, I think is still probably either getting hammered out or just
how do they? I mean, they announced that it was going to happen. So how
know,
could you announce it
weird.
Without the deal having already been done? And
I would think you would not, but like you would also think that they would just turn around and release the thing rather than promising it much later in the year, because this is not a hard. I mean, and I know that's a thing that people say a lot about software. It's like, oh, that should be easy. This is not hard. You have an iOS app already that does this.
Yeah.
Unless there's some other like shoe that was dropping, like, you know, letting you rent videos through Amazon through the app, which would require like crazy amounts more negotiations or what have you. You know, technologically speaking, this is pretty easy. Dozens of providers have these kinds of apps, so it's got to be something weirdly political.
Mark Gurman points out on Twitter as we're talking that the AirPods were delayed last year, October to December. So, you know, this happens And it's you know, there will be the takes,
the hottest of takes,
the takes about what's wrong at Apple and all of that. Although I'm inclined more agree with Harry McCracken, who basically said it's not surprising, like we said, and it's probably good to not rush things, right? Probably a good thing.
I have questions about software stuff too, though. I mean, we saw them dial back some of the software stuff in iOS 11, right? Like, so Apple Pay Cash is in the beta now for 11.2.
Yep.
There was the iMessage in the cloud thing has kind of
vanished.
Yeah, super weird, right? Like, that evaporated from the site, because there was a point where they said it was coming in the fall. And actually some of the evidence of that even has gone from the website.
I
was trying to dig up some stuff on it, and I was like, this, I swear it was here. And I felt like there was maybe one other software service related thing that was gone. But, it's interesting that they announced, you know, a couple of big features and had to push those back as well. But, you know, those are definitely complex things. Especially the cache thing, I feel like, is one of those things that requires a lot of testing. Because obviously you want anything where money transactions are involved to be bulletproof.
And you gotta have all the banks up and running and all of those things, right?
Yeah, so that's all fine, but the iMessage in the cloud thing is super weird. I don't know what's going on with that, but maybe we'll see it in iOS 12.
Yeah, I imagine it will appear... You know, I think it'll probably appear in iOS 11 at some point, but it is weird that they've kind of backed away from that feature. Like, let's not even talk about it. Like, I guess that was maybe harder than they thought, but they've never said anything about it.
It was in, I understand it was in one of the really early developer betas, and I heard people, like, I found people on, you know, discussion boards and stuff talking about how buggy it was. And again, people are very attached to their messages, right? So you don't want anything in there that's going to cause any sort of data loss or, you know, messages as it is. iMessage is already kind of wonky at times in terms of syncing between multiple devices. This is supposed to fix that, but one imagines that's a pretty large undertaking since it would require rewriting a lot of stuff probably from scratch.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it is the question to me is not... Should they be taking their time? The question is, what is going into their decision making to announce things?
Right, exactly.
When they can't hit the date.
Right, because in the past, Apple's always been very good at saying, you know, like we've seen, they announce products when they're like a week out, right? Because at that point, you're confident that you've got it. You've already started production. You know how to do shipping, etc., right? Like, that's why you don't have a lot of lag time. The more lag time you have, you know, the more chance there is for things to go wrong.
Well, the thing that baffled me about the HomePod thing, and, you know, when we were the Siri speaker, as we used to call it, when we were projecting about it, one of the reasons to announce it in June was to give developers time to work with SiriKit stuff, right?
Right.
And they didn't announce any of that. Yep. It was like, there will be a speaker at the end of the year, and then they walked away from it. And I think the baffling thing about that was, why announce it at the developer conference if you don't have a developer story?
Angle. Yeah. Right, because, I mean, otherwise, why not put it in your fall event, which is very media-focused and device-focused? Other than it was already pretty packed, why not have two events, which they've done in the past? They had enough stuff they could do. They could have done two events.
Also, and I think I've heard, like, iOS 11.2 has SiriKit for HomePod, right? So that's weird. Like, was that part of the plan? Or is that a last-minute addition? And is that one of the reasons that this is going on? Like, and why was that not discussed at WWDC, right? Like,
the other thing I just remembered that's also missing is AirPlay 2, which is also HomePod connected. That is supposedly also, I think, in the 11.2 beta. But it's been very unclear because they talk about, like, not only doing multi-room, but also doing stuff like using the HomePods as speakers for the Apple TV. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces in that technology as well. And that also didn't seem to be ready for the iOS 11 launch.
Yeah, it is a little bit baffling. I think we've also left out, there's so much here, another thing, another consequence of the HomePod being announced at WWDC unnecessarily, perhaps, is the firmware leaked and spoiled entire keynote.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's
for a product that was not, like, the firmware for a product that wasn't going to ship in 6 months.
It hasn't been their smoothest product launch, that's for sure.
So, yeah, not great.
That was all false flag, Jason. Not the real HomePod.
So the one reason, so that I can think of two reasons to announce the HomePod in June anyway. I mean, probably the real reason is they really thought it was going to ship in November or December. They were more confident than it turned out to be necessary. But all the rest of us are like, end of the year, Apple? Really? One is the fall event is really packed. And so I can see saying, you know, we'll put a WWDC. Although, again, for Pete's sake, if you don't have a developer story here, why are you doing that? And the other reason is, and this is a page from the Microsoft book, and a little bit Google uses this sometimes too, but Apple rarely does this, which is FUD. Like, literally, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, those who don't know what FUD is. This is, you announce that Apple is doing a speaker as early as possible because it will make people think twice before they buy an Echo.
Right. Absolutely. Strategic placement. Like, you're just sort of planting your flag and saying, like, hey, if you were thinking about doing that, if you were on the fence about buying one of those competitors' products, but you're an Apple person, but you're, like, intrigued by it, don't worry, we got something for you.
Yeah.
And so all those people are not going to go run out right now and buy an Echo, right? Like, most of those people are going to kind of hem and haw and be like, I'm bummed that it's not coming out. But they're going to wait.
And now they got the promise of, but early next year, it's going to be here, right? But they have delayed or deferred, or at least made you think about not buying an Echo or Google Home or something else in the interim time, because Apple's thing is lurking out there, and what might it be? Even though I think it's such
at this point, everyone knows.
And also the it's such a different product from an Amazon Echo in price that I'm not sure it actually, you know, makes sense once you break it down. But it's enough, again, to get back to the FUD kind of thing. It is a cloud that makes you, that's like, maybe I should wait and see. And I can see that as a reason to do it. I'm not saying that's the reason they did it. I think that Apple really did think that they were going to be able to ship this thing. They obviously were very proud of it and excited about it. The fact that they were playing the audio from it in a demo room at WWDC and all of that suggests that very strongly that they were very excited about doing this product. But yeah, obviously they bit off more than they could chew, or they have made course corrections, right? I mean, the fact that SiriKit for HomePod is in iOS 11.2, I mean, that may be directly connected to this. It's possible that that was initially meant to be an iOS 11 announcement, and then something happened where they're like, well, we don't know if we could do this. It could also be that they decided to add that because they were concerned as they built the product that it didn't do enough, and that they needed to tie in more with SiriKit stuff on iOS. That's also possible, and that could lead to delays in the software side of it. We also don't know, because there have been no reports, if this is a manufacturing issue or a software issue. It's entirely possible they're making these, but that they're going to have to do a firmware update. Hey, firmware update for HomePod.
don't worry, it'll leak.
Order to get the thing out, which is something that I was listening to, God, what podcast was that? I think it was ATP. And they were talking about how a lot of people's iPhone 10s, you know, had to do a software update. Did yours? Right. Did we talk about this?
I don't think mine. Yeah, no, mine did not.
Okay, some people they had to do a software update when they started the phone for the first time, and that means that one was made earlier, right? And they didn't have the latest version of the OS build on it that they wanted, so it instantly goes into a software update. This is something that Apple doesn't commonly do, but happens in other products all the time, and it is a way to let you stockpile finished hardware when the software is not done, and then you just force a software update on boot basically, and say no, you don't want to use this weird beta software, we're going to give you the real software. And so that's also possible. I'm just spitballing here, but it's possible that they're making the HomePods and that the hardware is fine and they are making them, and they do have enough to ship, but that the software isn't ready. I think it's more likely that there are hardware issues too, because the software, you know, the software can ship at the speed of light almost. Like they could finish the software in mid December,
right? While they're scaling,
but yeah. They may have an internal drop dead, which is unless you can ship your final firmware by November 17th or whatever it is, we're not going to even announce a ship date for this thing, because we're going to have missed the holiday shopping window, and we might as well just push it off. It may be that, but there are many reasons, and maybe we'll get a report about why exactly this happened. But the one thing I think we're not is surprised, only because when Apple says end of the year and it's months away, it just seems so easy for that to slip, because we've seen it before, and we may see it again. I mean, I really want to get that email from one of my contacts on the Mac PR team saying we'd like you to come down to Cupertino for iMac Pro. I really want to get that email because I'm excited about that product. But you know, I would also not be shocked if I get that email on December 28th. I would not be shocked, or that they make an announcement saying it's coming in January. It would not surprise me.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know, they want to hit those targets, but at the same time, getting stuff in by the end of December doesn't actually make a big difference.
If it's not a holiday product, it's irrelevant that it's by the end of December. It's completely arbitrary.
And it doesn't shift it outside of the financial quarter or whatever, because their quarter doesn't end, I think.
I think the quarter ends at some point at the last week of the month. So it would, but at that point, it's so late
doesn't matter.
It's not a material connection to the bottom line.
Yeah. So, I mean, nice. I think it's nice to put that line in the sand sometimes, but it is definite that, you know, Apple traditionally, whenever it says something will ship by the end of something, it usually means probably like the last day of that thing or very close to it. So, yeah, no surprises there. I budgeted money in my budget for it because I was going to buy one, and now I'm thinking about what else to spend. I was thinking the other night that I might finally plop out money for Logic, considering upgrading my audio editing workflow. I've been using GarageBand this whole time, and it's fine, but I edit a lot of podcasts, and it seems like it might save me some time. So I thinking about making that move, and hey, that's cheaper than a HomePod.
It's true. I gave you an old copy of Logic, but it is an old copy of Logic.
Yeah.
It was in a box on discs. Woo!
Yeah. I did try that briefly, but I found it totally
snorkeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked at the Logic, you know, I was looking at the screenshots. I'm like, oh, yeah, they basically remade GarageBand in the last year to look like Logic.
Yes. So, well, GarageBand is Logic Lite, basically. It's the same code base, even. I think
but it doesn't have the it's without the features that I want.
When they did that redo of GarageBand, and when everybody's like, oh, they took away the podcasting features, all that, my understanding is that is literally just they went from the old code base to a new code base that is Logic with a bunch of features, with most of the features stripped out, which makes sense in a lot of ways. But I avoided it like you. I avoided it for a long time because I was like, oh my God, like I'm just doing what I can to get the podcasts out, right? Like to do the Incomparable every week at that point was my podcast editing task for the week. And, you know, it would take several hours. And I thought, if I use a new tool, it's not going to take several hours. It's going to take like a whole day, maybe the whole weekend.
That's what's holding me off.
I don't
want to
do that.
I have to learn. I have to learn a new workflow.
Yeah.
And I know that it might get better over time. It might improve to the point where it's faster than what I'm doing now. But that cost of investing all the time in learning how to use the new tool is a little daunting.
It's the classic calculation. This is the thing that, I mean, when I wrote this week about Photoshop, it's the exact same thing, right? Which is, I wrote a piece this week about how Adobe has totally failed its users, its customers on iOS. And there are lots of alternatives to Photoshop on iOS, but the Photoshop apps on iOS are a joke and they don't do anything Photoshop does. And it's infuriating as a Photoshop user that I can't take my layered PSDs on my iPad and use them. And I just, I can't, at least not in Adobe's tools. I can use it maybe with third-party tools, but not with Adobe's tools. And that's really dumb. But, and my point in that at the beginning of that article, because people always will write in and say, well, you should just use Pixelmator, is I've used Photoshop for 20 plus years. I know it so well. And that, and changing, like, it's what we've just been talking about, which is you have to learn something new, which takes time. You've got to hope that you get that time back. You don't always get it back, because sometimes you're like, oh my God, I can't do this. And then you've wasted all of that time. And the thing that sometimes happens, and with I think with going from a less featured tool to a more full featured tool, like GarageBand to Logic, is less likely to happen. Whereas going from Photoshop to an independently written app, right? You also risk learning it and going along, and then, you know, a month down the road, finding there's this one thing that you always do in Photoshop that it can't do. And I've had that happen a couple of times with different tools where I'm like, oh, now how do I do this? Oh, I can't. And then you're like, well, what do I do? Do I go back to Photoshop? Do I find another tool? And now you've got another learning curve, which is not to say you shouldn't learn new things, but it is to say there is that huge calculation there of how much time do I want to put in, and do I feel like it's likely that I'm going to get the time back? And I believe very strongly, because of my experience, that you will get the time back in learning Logic because of all the amount of time you fuss with, you know, audio levels and things like that in podcasts. But the it doesn't change the fact that you have to make the upfront investment.
Right. And the advantage here, the advantage, at least in this particular progression, is that because Logic and GarageBand are essentially, you know, a shared product to a certain extent, there's the idea that hopefully the investment into the new tool is lessened in terms of the time it takes, because so much of it is built on the existing tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, rather than going to, like, if I was to switch to Audition or something like that, right?
Where it'd be like, speaking of Adobe,
throw out everything I know and start entirely from scratch.
Right. And I know people who swear by Audition, and I chose to learn Logic partially because I wanted the single a la carte purchase and not to do a full Creative Cloud subscription to get Audition, which is what was required. But at this point, I would learn Audition, except not only do I not have a full Creative Cloud subscription, I just have the Photoshop photography bundle. But with that, those two tools are so comparable that I'm concerned that I will never make back the time that I put into learning it in efficiency, because I've got a super efficient Logic workflow that works for me. But Audition would be, just for those out there who are like, hey, but Audition, like, if you've got Creative Cloud and you're looking at upgrading your audio experience, then you should totally try Audition, because you already got Creative Cloud. You should absolutely do that. But for me, Logic was a better choice. And I think
Tool investments are, you know, vary based on, you know, the complexity too, right? Like, switching from one text editor to another is probably a lot lower of a curve than going from different, you know, audio editing or video editing applications, right? There's much less. It's like you can, like, type in a window until you feel like, all right, I'm pretty good.
I mean, you can set up a house in any app, and the more complex the app is, the more you can set up house. And, you know, by that I mean, like, I've got a bunch of stuff in BBEdit on the Mac that's set up with keyboard shortcuts and my defaults and all of that. That said, on iOS, you know, I will just flip back and forth depending on my mood and what features I want between OneWriter and Editorial, and I do that all the time. And if another one came out, I would probably, like, I've got some macros in them that I do use, but my investment in setting them up is so low that if I need to do it for a different one and just make a change, I can do that. It's, you know, it's when you get kind of an entrenched workflow and optimized, right? This is when we talk about automation stuff. It's the same thing. It's like, you get something really super wired and optimized where it's like, I put in a lot of work to make this thing super, you know, make it scream, make it super fast, and now I got to move to something else. It's like, oh, it's not just moving, it's all of the loss of productivity until you get back up to speed.
Even at that point, there's like lost time and efficiency in terms of, like, if I have to sit down at someone else's computer and do the same task for whatever reason, I'm not at home, my computer's dead, etc. all of a sudden those tasks get much more complex too, because it's like, oh, I don't have any of my automation. Now I have to remember how to do this without the automation.
that happened when
that's all more nightmare.
When my iMac was being repaired and the spider was being removed, and I was using my MacBook Air, and my MacBook Air was like a couple generations behind on my on some of my automation stuff, and I'd be like, I want to upload this picture to 6 colors, and it was like, all right, let's open Photoshop and do this script, and I'm like, no, I have a better way to do this now. And it's like, not on this computer, you don't, buddy. It becomes more brittle that way too.
Right. It's also the reason I don't spend a lot of time on bells and whistles, and even in applications I use very frequently. So, like, people ask me a lot of times about writing, and I'm like, well, I use Scrivener for my novels, but I don't take advantage of, like, a fraction of what Scrivener has to offer. And that part of that is because I don't want to, ultimately, at the end of the day, my job is getting words down on a page, and you can do that pretty much anywhere. I like the way Scrivener lets me organize myself, but the more time I spend investing into it, the harder it is if I at some point need to go to a different app, or I want to write something in someplace else, you know. So I don't necessarily muck around with all the preferences and toggles and all that, because it's like, I want a place to write, and I want to be able to organize things in this way, and that's it. I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Scrivener, we should mention Scrivener 3 is coming out soon, very soon.
So I think we've probably both been on the beta for it. Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've barely touched it though, because again, I'm also working with Scrivener every day for work, and so I'm a little wary of using a beta on things that are even though I back up and all that stuff. Like, I'm just a little wary of using beta on like my live copies of things.
The thing that I have liked about Scrivener 3, and I haven't used it a lot, but the thing that I've liked about it is that it is it's the first version to come out after the iOS version, and so it's all kind of like coming together it's more connected. I also don't use most of the features in Scrivener, but that's true of Logic too, and that's true of almost like BBEdit. I don't use any of the developer features of BBEdit either.
I used to back when I used to actually develop code. Yeah. I used to, but yeah, now I don't.
No, so
I turn most of them off.
One more thing about you potentially using Logic. And this goes for everybody out there about when you're buying hardware or software or whatever it is. One thing that can give you more confidence in doing this is if you know somebody who you can ask if there's trouble.
True.
Because that was always when I would have a friend or relative say, I am thinking of buying a PC. I would always be like, that's great. I cannot help you with your PC. So just keep that in mind. You can buy. My in-laws did that at one point. They have a Mac now, but they're like, we're going to buy a PC. I'm like, good luck. But we ask you for help with technical things. I said, not with your PC. It's not going to happen. And they got infested with viruses and was a disaster. And they bought an iMac eventually. But, so what my point is, somebody who has lots of podcasts and Logic. You actually know multiple people. So that would be, you got
that
a safety.
It makes a lot easier.
You're not going to be on your own. When I learned Logic, I did not know anybody who used Logic, and it was terrifying because I'd touch a key. This still happens sometimes. I'd touch a key and like everything would change. And I'm like, how do I get back? Can I undo? It's like, no, undo doesn't affect views. I'm like, no, where am I? And I would just like quit the app and come back later and see like, did it revert? And sometimes it would and sometimes it wouldn't, and it was really scary. So
your PC story reminded me very quick of a story of when August I went to a friend's wedding out in Seattle, and he wanted to run a slideshow during the reception, and he has a PC, and they were trying to set it up on the day before the wedding. Like, he and a couple of, I was a groomsman, me and a couple of the other groomsmen were going in there and trying to figure out how to use this like Microsoft slideshow product, and we couldn't get the thing on the Wi-Fi, etc., and we were like playing around with it and trying to figure out. And the funniest part to me was I eventually ended up fixing it and getting it on the Wi-Fi. But what amused me was that the groom and the other groomsmen who were helping were both worked at Microsoft and could not figure out how this program worked or how to make the network work. It's like, oh, guys, come on. This is your stuff. So nobody understands PCs, not even the people who work at Microsoft.
That's why there's a nice IT industry around Windows.
Indeed. I used to work in it, and it amazed me that I had not touched a PC in maybe a decade, and I still managed to be like, well, pretty much all the things with the PC problems come down to like these three things. I mean, those are trade secrets, though. I can't reveal those.
All right. Well, thanks to subscribers, we should say thank you to subscribers, because many of you who subscribed initially when we announced this recently renewed your subscription. And if you didn't and you're still listening to this, that's okay. Please go and renew your subscription. We appreciate that. At some point in the new year, we're going to switch to a different feed URL as a method of slight reinforcement of who is paying and who is not, but not yet. So you can stay here for now. And if you're not paying, I guess you can continue to listen, but please resubscribe or update your information or whatever it is. But a lot of, so many people renewed, and we appreciate that. It's great to see, because it does literally, it is the thing that allows us to do what we do. So thank you, everyone out
there
for listening.
Thanks, people.
Thank you. Dan, see you later.
Jason. Adios.
Bye.